Welcome to this edition of the Law Firm Blueprint. I'm one of your hosts, Jay Ruane, and that man over there, my guy, Seth Jerome Price. I'm coming up with Jay names for you in the middle there, Seth.
But I appreciate
Seth, it's been a while since we've been live together. Obviously, life gets in the way of doing something ever so often, but it's good to see your smiling face. How's your week going this week?
It is going well. I feel like there are moments when things are clicking. You can't look too closely because then you start to see some stuff that you don't want to see. But when you get big picture numbers that like month over month, year after year, numbers are in the right direction, that's a great thing.
Yeah, for sure. I've been going through some struggles at my firm. We had changed up some senior leadership. And I got more involved. My summer of Jay has devolved into me doing a lot more work, but it's really been interesting because it's allowed me sort of with all that I've learned and been able to observe while I've been out, make some changes. And I've gotten multiple messages during our check-ins that I'm doing now that people are a lot happier with the way the new management style is with me back in charge. Breaking us into a pod system, I think, has made us a lot more efficient. And I think there's going to be some benefits. You know, we're still in the bumpy road as we work things out. I've got two lawyers who have gone out on FMLA leave for 12 weeks.
Two.
One was the senior leader, and another one was a sort of a grinder who did a lot of the work that some of the court lawyers didn't want to have to do. But he was trained to do something that they hadn't been trained in. So I have to train them up to get them there. But it allows me to see how my old system modified is a lot better than the system that we had in the middle, because we're doing some cradle to grave stuff with the clients, individual lawyers wise. And I think we're going to come out stronger than ever. Having two employees put in for FMLA on the same day just blows my mind. And Connecticut, luckily for them, it's going to be unpaid coming out of us. But Connecticut has a program where they're going to get $1,000 a week. You're not going to get rich off of it, but for 12 weeks, they're going to get $1,000 to pay their bills. So,
the question, if that was not there, would they have taken it?
I think so. Well, I mean, one of them.
Well, don't go into too much detail, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, one of them medically, it needs the time to get well. Yeah. And the other one, I think it wouldn't be surprised if he launches his own firm while he's out.
Right. And look, it is something we talk a lot, right? I go to a lot of conferences and masterminds, and I love it. But I know that when I was building the firm, there were a lot of moments where I'm like, do I get on a plane and go somewhere to get a nugget to get further versus you know what you need to be doing? Right. And while I would love you to be on a beach for the summer or whatever it is you chose to do with your time, there are times when the firm needs you, and that if the systems are not in place, you really can't go fly away, because if it's built on a house of cards and you're not there, the only reason that it's staying up is your sweat equity. And that while we may aspire to do a summer in Europe, much easier said than done, especially given, and we talk about this a lot, the lack of redundancy during growth mode, even at the stage that we're at. There are a few key positions, some that don't matter because there's redundancy, but when you're building or when you have two people plus some other turnover from the recent past, that does not allow a machine that really allows you to work on your business. You're back in the business, whether we like it or not.
Right. I mean, I have a law license and I can get in there and I can handle, some administrative hearings. I mean, I looked it up in our CRM, and I've done over 5,000 administrative driver's license hearings. So when I showed up last week, the judge was like, "Oh my gosh, it's you, you're back. What's going on? I haven't seen you in 3 years." Probably more than that, because of COVID. And, we were talking, and now I'm like, I'm shooting it up, shooting the shit.
You love it.
I'm back talking to these judges and we're having a good time. I'm like, hey, this is what's going on. And I'm recording it because it's a remote hearing, so I can train my people on how to interact with these judges. And I think we're going to come out stronger. It's just, I got to go through the suck. You know, hey, that's what we do. You know, there's some parts of this job do suck. Let's face facts. You know, it's not all rainbow.
Well, it's, and again, you have an amazing team, and you know, look, I've had, you know, historically very proud of the fact we have not lost many people we didn't want to lose. But when you have one of those, you know, for us, it's been, you know, once or twice a decade, and you get that phone call, and there's a long pause before you start speaking, you know what's coming. Mm-hmm. It's those building blocks that are there are not going to get fixed on 2 weeks' notice. And that's where I think as owner, like you ideally shouldn't be, but very often are that plug in the, you know, in the wall, make sure the water is not spewing everywhere.
Exactly. So, you know, it is what it is. But I wanted to talk to you about something that, that we talked briefly offline about, off the show. And I think we need to delve into a little further. You know, we're starting to use AI. One of the things that I was able to do is actually put together a sentencing memorandum. We had a client give us all of their biographical data. And then, you know, using ChatGPT, we were able to craft a very compelling narrative of their life story that we could add to their sentencing memorandum. And that was awesome, you know, because I'm not the best creative writer. I'm more of a technical writer. This was able to you know, put some flourish on it that it wasn't made up. It wasn't like what we saw in New York where the lawyer got ChatGPT to just make stuff up. But you had an issue with some AI in your office as well, right?
Well, no, it wasn't AI specific. I'd say first headline, we all need to be on this. You know, at Pilma, Justin Lovely did a great job. He seems like he's ahead of the curve down in South Carolina doing some great stuff with AI. Andrew Finkelstein at a mastermind really opened my eyes up to the fact that, like, this is not going to come from the trenches. It's going to have to come from the top. And I find it tough because my leadership bench at the firm is not AI first. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to figure out how do I, you know, do I require people to be on the Edge browser so that they can have ChatGPT closer to them? Because the stuff you're talking about in the sentencing memo, again, co-pilot, not the writer that you're going to turn in, right? First draft, look at it. But what I love were people's responses to email, similar to your sentencing memorandum, where it's allowing for, and let's say an upset client that has 3 points, answering that, but instead of, as you said, as a technical writer, point one, point two, three, I'm so sorry to hear that. We strive to be like all the stuff that you know you need to include that, but may not be your natural inclination when you're like, I can't believe I'm dealing with this. Right. That those types of things, the power is tremendous. And I think what I'm struggling with is, especially at scale, and we talk about managers and then mid-level managers, we could have an entire episode or week, you know, series on mid-level managers as people get to that point. But the idea is, how am I going to get this down to the trenches? Because it's not people's first inclination, not dissimilar. I know we're going to pivot to this in a second, to leveraging of international labor. And some of it is, it's just going to happen. But I wish that there was a way to not just get it, you know, out there, but like, you know, we were on Bonusly at the firm. Maybe it's giving Bonusly points for anything that somebody does with AI, just incentivizing like you would for anything else that you want to move the needle on.
And one of the things that I think you need to have is training to your people about, you know, the negatives that go along with AI, like the tendency to hallucinate and add stuff that doesn't really exist in the real world, like that lawyer in New York with the command, do not hallucinate, you know, so that you're telling it. But, you know, you almost really need to effectuate an AI policy in your office so that people know, okay, what can I use it for? What shouldn't I use it for? That type of thing.
Well, and what I think the part of it is as an owner, we can't be so frugal. A free version of AI that's using an old database is not the way to go. Absolutely. But look, Even Up just raised $50 million. You know, having a closed environment, using the different, you know, case tests, using environments where at least somebody is, what they're pulling from is legitimate and vetted. To me, that's the next step. It's not about like, what can I get for free? And there's nothing wrong with that, right? You want a draft, but you're right. First, but like it's which comes first. First, I need the people to embrace it, right? At some point, I'll tell a story in a second that pivots from this, but like, you know, my kid in school, my eldest, who will take any shortcut he can, is doing half his assignments with ChatGPT. I'm sure that it's readily apparent to anybody who reads it what it is. It's not long before the employees do that. Right now, I'm like, encouraging them to do that, not to do it badly,
right.
But like, I want them to sort of be aware of it, because the first thing is playing around with it. Hopefully we don't end up in a court mess because somebody actually goes one step further or sends them to a client. But the idea that first you got to start playing with it. And right now I'm not even getting people playing with it to use it badly. Forget about using it well.
Well, I know my marketing department is really using it a lot to develop scripts and ideas that we can use, for just ideas that we can put out for blogs and for videos and that type of thing, give us some talking points and that type of thing. I think it's a little while until the lawyers feel comfortable using it. We're going to do some training on that.
And it's not all or nothing.
Right.
And it's just getting familiar, but just like this, right? So we, like, for instance, at Blue Shark, we are very aware, since we use contract writers, that there's a good chance, just like duplicate content, we always use Copyscape to make sure we have to make sure that we're not getting somebody handing us, because look, Google is well aware of AI content. If they wanted to, they could easily, and according to one person, that I just was meeting with, again, secondhand, I was to disclose it, not primary source, Google is actually dinging sites, which is not what I was told by my Google contact, but they are seeing sites get dinged for straight ChatGPT content, which would make sense. Follow the money. It's not their content. They don't want ChatGPT to win. And that's one more thing that would propel ChatGPT into the stratosphere, is if that works and they're just trying to buy time for Bard to catch up. The theory being, again, secondhand, was that Bard will not be penalized for content because it's their product. Don't know if that's true.
I'm sure there'll be some, you know, investigations into that, you know, if that's the way they do it. But, you know, the thing about the content is that it's vanilla content, you know.
Which is great for manuals, for ideas of what's trending on TikTok, because you want somebody else's ideas.
Right.
But for original content, that's where it gets really... It can be brutal, but for stuff that is, you know, a best practice that's crowdsourced, that's the stuff that's just genius. And if we don't get there, we're going to be, you know, we're going to be the taxi driver or the limo company when Uber came out. You know, it's
really interesting. I know a year ago, I mean, it was only a year ago, I actually tasked a VA to go back through Avvo and go into there and say, give me a list of every question asked in this category. And then we sorted by the topics and we found the top 150 questions or derivations of a question. And then we used that as a springboard to write content ourselves.
Right. And now
machine can do it.
Right. It would give that to you. But the Avvo thing was good, you know, and we should not minimize that. And I think that hopefully is whether or not ChatGPT is recognizing that, is that not all ideas are equal. If you saw on Avvo that one of these things got massive engagement and something else was just an idea, you know, and that's theoretically where AI is headed, is that it could give you that. We saw something. So I was expecting my next headache, I should be like, there could be like a sitcom, my next headache, right, was going to be people using ChatGPT inappropriately. I have not been so lucky in the sense that I'm not getting the adoption that I want. Like, it's sort of like I tell people on intake when they start, your inclination on aggressiveness of conversation is a 2. Let's say that I'm an 8. You know, when you get to a 5, I'll be thrilled. Like, it's okay for you to push a little bit outside your comfort zone. And if you get somebody who calls up and says, you know what, I'm not hiring these guys because you guys called me too many times, I'll bonus you. If it happens 3 times in the same day, yeah, we'll have a talk. But like, I need you moving towards the line. And I feel like that way about AI is that we should be so lucky that people are so savvy with it that they're trying to do something wrong. Again, first time won't be pleased. Hopefully it doesn't land me in court. But we had an interesting thing. This was a contractor, domestic contractor, who had a portfolio of work being done in a specific area. And the work was okay, and then it started to slip. And we couldn't figure out what was going on until some person from overseas contacted us to say that they were doing the work for the person we hired domestically.
And so outsourced their job?
They outsourced their job, not well, mind you. And the person was complaining because they hadn't been paid. And I'm just sitting here again, it was, I would say no harm, no foul, but nominal cleanup. It was not a client type issue. It was something back end. But the idea being that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we don't know what our headache of the day is for you as FMLA. Now it's going to be, are you going to have remote workers who are sitting there multitasking and basically outsourcing their work? Now, again, if this person was smart, they would have had the first draft done and given to us, and we would have been none the wiser. But instead, they were taking the shortcut and saying, hey, just like ChatGPT, if you turn that in, you're going to end up on the front page of the New York Law Journal, and you're going to be disbarred. If you, if you were leveraging that person, in theory, they're starting their own little mini business. I would have been none the wiser. Not that, but the question now is, you know, are we going to have people sign stuff? Are we going to have any sort of tests? What are we going to be doing?
How do you prevent that if it's a remote worker? I mean, I guess you install software on the computer to make sure that they're actually doing the work. I mean, you could look at their keyboard stuff, but that becomes a management nightmare that prevents you from doing anything else if you're having to check on that stuff. Or do you hire somebody that then audit them? I mean, our auditor system is working really well in our office. We audit our lawyers. We have a 15-minute phone call with them every Wednesday. We'll talk about last week, this week, and next week. What are you doing? What's going on? And it's just a check-in with a senior lawyer, just to make sure that people are heading in the right direction. But do you have to do that?
Or eventually, is somebody going to be like, and at one point, will you care? But like, if somebody's using AI, ChatGPT, or otherwise for taking the work, again, assuming that they weren't taking a shortcut and using that as their first draft, you know, at some point, it's interesting because what protocols you talk about for AI. But again, with this crowd, I would bet if with our listening audience, which every time I'm on the road, I'm just amazed at how many people out there are listening, getting value from, which it just makes me so happy that when you and I sit down and go through this, that we're impacting firms. But I bet you there are people out there. I saw this in the international space, even that when I started to dig into what was going on, that some of the larger outsourcing groups that were using overseas labor, that people over time would end up basically creating their own mini pyramid under them, where work was getting done not by them, but that they were taking the arbitrage of work. And so, you know, again, it's there. And the question is, the more we're in touch, you know, we've talked a lot historically about things like work snaps. And while we still use that for international labor, there's more and more better, newer technology, which has other rationales as far as productivity. We pulled away from work snaps domestically because we saw some negative implications, particularly from Gen Z, that really was not pleased with the sort of big brother concept. But with all the stuff going on, I'm not sure, you know, at some point, are we going to need to go back to making sure just to protect client? You know, in this particular case, you know, if somebody is going to be sharing, we take a leap of faith that the people we hire are protecting privilege. But God forbid it's one step further removed. I mean, all of a sudden passwords are out there, things like that. That could be a really scary slippery slope.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've instituted in our office is I have an assistant who's on the administrative team, and you know, we have an audit log of our CRM, so we can see who's accessing it and who's accessing it when, and you know, we haven't found it yet, but you know, we lock down our passwords so that, you know, it's one user per time. Like you can't have multiple browsers open into our CRM because we don't want them to give out their password to somebody else to be able to get in. We have two-factor authentication.
Well, and that's, you know, look, I got scared straight in a mastermind recently where they talked about, and they showed a lawyer who probably took a seven-figure hit, some covered by insurance, some not, with somebody getting in, not as it got to the emails, passwords, could email from their accounts, got into their bill.com. And look, we are well aware that our IT level is not, none of us in listening to the show, with rare exceptions, have somebody at the level that really would protect us 100%. I mean, the bad guys are always doing stuff. But the question I would beg our audience, and I have focused on this tremendously recently, and this goes to, this would prevent somebody sharing what they're doing, but the two-factor authentication.
Oh, it's huge.
Huge. And if you're not doing that, it's at your peril. So it's a pain for your people. You may get a little pushback, but we've gone so far as now using one of those tools. I forget the name, we can put it in the comments, where we actually send test emails to people to see whether they're downloading things, to see whether they're adding their passwords. And, we went from, 15% when we tested it cold to 3%. And if I take out my three worst offenders, a 1% error rate. But, Andrew Finkelstein talks about just like after a couple false hits, he fires people if they keep downloading things they shouldn't.
Oh, absolutely.
The question is, but it's, burying our heads in the sand on this. Again, what will be my issue du jour? Is it going to be somebody using AI? Is it going to be somebody outsourcing their job? Or is it going to be somebody just letting somebody in, giving them the keys to the castle, and some guy from third world country coming in and ransacking you, and you trying to pay them in Bitcoin to stop the bleed?
Just the idea of all of those things makes me upset to my stomach,
But you know what? But each of them, you could do something about, right? You could make sure you're maniacal about two-factor authentication. You can make sure that if you want to go a step further, you can test your team, educate them, right? Again, easier said than done for smaller firms, but in one sense, easier, right? Go to each person and say, this is a seven-figure error. This is, and again, when I first presented it, I have people that were like, oh yeah, I need more. And now we now get the reports. It's pretty slick. It pops something up and just says, hey, you just allowed somebody in. Here's what you do to get, here, and gives them a retraining module, right there. And
then, oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. My new director of personnel has been with me forever. Her husband does cybersecurity for a major bank. And the first thing she said was, we need to do an audit to make sure we're good. I mean, he's a smart guy. He was a Green Beret for years, and he's a resource I can tap.
So understood. And like everything else, I mean, one of my ethics lawyers always told me, it's risk getting out of bed in the morning. But the question is, forget about what, and the geeks will tell you, you got to do this, and a lot of that's true, but there's very basic fundamental stuff. We're all using software in the cloud. Mm-hmm. I made a decision for myself a long time ago that I knew that my team was not sophisticated enough to manage an in-house server. I just, if I was on the witness stand and we had been attacked and I had to see, they were sort of going after my IT guy, I'm like, yep, we did not pay enough to get the guy who could really protect us. And so there are guys out there that'll do audits, that are fee for service, not just the connection. But I think that I want to be away from the favor economy, but I would just, I think the number one thing that everybody listening to this can do is, if there's anything you're doing that doesn't have two-factor authentication that's meaningful, banks, online bill pay, softwares, emails, all of that stuff. And again, there's further ones, which isn't just a text. The next level is it goes through your app on your phone,
right?
Because people are now stealing the phones. Each piece, I just want to get one step.
Well, I mean, think about this. How many people in our audience now have a handwritten list of passwords taped somewhere in their office? And if you need a password, you go to it and you do it, that type of thing. Just get a password manager that you can share password manager, and then change your passwords regularly.
Well, no, I get you. And look, I was guilty of this. I'll disclose this. There's a long time my attitude was, unless it was a bank or email or something really important, my attitude was like, for frequent flyer accounts, this and that, like, I forgot the password so much that I use a standardized password. And even within the firm, stuff that was non-monetizable, next thing you know, literally, it's on the dark web. Everybody knows the password. And, my wife's Marriott account, I got a call from like a Des Moines, Residence Inn, that somebody was literally checking into the hotel using her password, using her account that had been logged in. And then months later, a airline consolidator that buys frequent flyer miles calls to say that somebody was offering my wife's Southwest miles to him. You know, so it is, you know, it is a cat and mouse game, but it is no longer one password. It is protocols. And if you don't have the resources in-house, getting somebody to do an audit, but at the very, very least, getting to the two-factor authentication blocks a lot of nonsense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what else you got going on? We got a few minutes left before we end the show.
What I would say is, you know, I'm excited. I told you this was going to be the year of some personal travel, doing enough work travel, but really excited taking my wife back to Australia. I had studied there at University of Sydney. I was one of two Americans in an all Australian.
So they really have a poor opinion of Americans then.
Absolutely. This was 1990, and I felt like a soothsayer. It's before the web was a real thing, and the Simpsons had hit in the States, and I was telling them what about the Simpsons. I remember they're like, nah, we're never gonna like the Yanks, the Septics. They call the Septic tanks Yanks, Septics. We'll never love. They ended up embracing the Simpsons more than we did, if that's possible. And it is really, really interesting. So I went back there as a summer associate and spent a summer on Manly Beach. But it is such a special place. So happy to go back and be like time capsule. I hope I get to meaningfully reconnect with a lot of my peeps from way back.
Okay. So my summer associate was not in Australia. I did a summer associate working for an environmental law at the Uniroyal chemical plant in Naugatuck, Connecticut, where somebody was being sued because of, you know, they were dropping chemicals into a local watershed or something like that. And we had to process just, you know, hundreds of boxes of discovery and determine if it was relevant or not relevant. The only thing I got from that summer was I got to see the actual paperwork for the creation of Naugahyde, because that's where they made fake leather, Naugahyde. That was at the Naugatuck Uniroyal chemical plant. And the best part about it is it was like a 12-week gig, and I was making good money. And at the end, we got through all the boxes, everything indexed, everything responsive. And as we're standing there, someone says, well, what's that door at the end of the room where everything was stored? And they open up the door, and there was like another 1,000 banker's boxes. We had done 500 over the course of the summer, and they found another 1,000 boxes, and they looked, they're like, you want to work all year? And I was like, heck no, man, this is not the life for me. Doing document discovery responsive stuff. I still know, he was like, yeah, that paid for me to go to law school for the next 2 years, because it was definitely worth it. Worth it for me to stick around and transfer to the night division.
I'll leave you with this. It shows you how you never, like, the networking, the people. I met you, what, 15 years ago on Bubba's couch somewhere? I don't even remember. But it was like, you know, the how people come back into your lives. So I'm a rising ninth grader, literally my middle guy right now, who's going to camp. I, for whatever reason, didn't click with camp and instead interned at the Bronx DA's office. This is like free Bonfire of the Vanities, right? So pre-gentrification in New York, take the subway up there. And me and my buddy Schmertz, basically on the first day of our internship, unpaid volunteer internship, was we got lumped into the Minority Summer Works Group, and they gave us an assignment, and we finished it like in the first half day, and that was supposed to be our work for the summer. So this lady from the Minority Summer Works program that we were lumped in with calls a guy named Scott Thompson, who was then in ADA, and says, I have two of your type down here, like, and basically take them. So we ended up with him, shadowing him. This, I don't remember the Crocca daycare scandal, which was like an awful, awful thing where I was carrying anatomically correct dolls in the courtroom for these preschoolers or daycare kids to sort of, this guy saw as an opportunity to get out of the ADA, out of the Bronx DA's office. And he ends up giving both of us a resume. My buddy's dad was the dean of Hofstra Law School at the time, Eric Schmertz. And my dad was a practicing lawyer in New York, not a player, not a huge networker. And he sent his resume to a group that finds IP lawyers jobs. That's what he wanted. They had never placed somebody with that experience. The next day they got a request. Didn't hear it, you know, finished my internship, left. We go to my Yankee games after the internship, which is a great part of being at the Bronx DA's office. It's the building you saw
from the old stadium. Right there.
Right. And lost touch. I am in law school first year, and my dad's partner is approached by a guy at a CLE. He's one of the big IP guys, and said, this was Scott Thompson, introduced him to my dad's partner and said, hey, your partner made my career. And we reconnected. We went to the Yale Club for lunch with my dad, where he's a member, and we got to reconnect. Turns out he got a job made partner from that original place and was then at that point in-house at Philip Morris. So his thank you back to me these many years later was a summer associateship in Sydney, where I had the time of my life, thanks to him. So that is how I ended up as a summer associate in Sydney, Australia.
That's pretty cool. So folks, you know, if you're watching this in the Facebook group, please let us know in the comments what your summer associate position was. It may or may not have anything to do with the type of law that you're practicing now, but I'm sure you've got a good story. Hopefully better than mine. I don't know if you can top Seth's, but that's what we're looking for down in the comments. Let us know how you spent your summer vacation when you were in law school. But for that, we're going to end the show today. Thank you so much for being with us. Of course, if you're listening on the go, be sure to give us a 5-star review for our Law Firm Blueprint podcast. Seth, any parting words?
No, excited for the week, the challenges, and you know, wish you well. I know you got some tough waters there. I'm sorry that you're back in, but you know what? You're
gonna build. That's fun. I gotta tell you, I'm feeling more alive than ever
before. I gotta tell you, you seem more excited about the getting back into it than you did.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, man. I wasn't ready to die yet. I wasn't ready to retire and wear the white shoes and the knee high white socks and drive around in my Eldorado down in Florida. I wasn't ready for that. I still got stuff to contribute. So
very good,
back in, baby. All right, folks. Have a great one. We'll see you next week. Bye. Bye for now.